1951. However, I want to give you a brief review of what we did before, so that we can better understand, and obviously be able to understand better that which we are doing this evening. Now, my wife tells me that what we are doing is very difficult. To me, it doesn't seem difficult. I find it very simple. And I find it so simple because the way the Derek Hashem built it up. It is all so logical. Now, I imagine that most of you went to school. What do they call the school between elementary and high school? Most of you went to junior high. And then you learned geometry. Did you learn it? You didn't learn geometry? You did, actually. Perhaps some of you went through the lower classes of high school. And if you did, you should have done Euclid, did you or didn't you?
Yeah.
You didn't do, didn't you do geometry?
Yeah.
But you didn't do Euclid?
Yes,
sir. Pardon?
Fine geometry
in Euclid. Did you ever take Euclid and read it? You never went to the library and asked for a Euclid in English, of course. You didn't do that.
I think I understand.
Now, your curiosity didn't awaken you to do that. Well, it's an experience to you, you see. Euclid, the way he builds up one theorem after another. He establishes a theorem and then he goes to the next and builds it up on the previous theorems. That is the way the Derek Hashem builds up this. And he says that one has to study mathematics and logic. You see, he was speaking to the European culture where they do study these subjects. So that is what he was able to tell us. And this is built up so step by step that you just can't go wrong. Yes,
Barbara. Well, when Pat asked the question last week, she was lost. I was also lost. And I think we get confused when it's talking about man today in Adam.
Yes, in fact, I agree with that. That is where you get confused.
That's where I've been. That's specifically, and that's the last specifically says this is where we are.
All right, right. Yes. All right, now, what we did a week ago was that the Derek Hashem established that there was a vast difference in man before the sin and after the sin. Now, and he says that from now on, he will be speaking on two levels. Sometimes he will speak about man before the sin, and sometimes about man after the sin. And in deference to your request, I will make it very clear when he's speaking about man before the sin, and when he's speaking about man after the sin. Now, he says that after the sin, there was a great difference. Shini Gordel Hoyobel. This is, we are doing that page of 48 and 49, and I'm briefly reviewing paragraph 5, paragraph 8 and 5. There was a tremendous difference, a shini gordel, in man from what he was before he sinned and after he sinned. He says the details of this difference will become clearer as we go along. Now, the main difference, he says, and this I thought we did it extremely clearly, because my work is the clarity of obscurity. That's what I'm here for. Now, we explain, at least the Deva Shem explains, that before the sin, now man before the sin, he was placed equally between good and evil. He was right in the middle. So the draw to good and the draw to evil was absolutely the same. Now, is that today like that today?
Yeah.
To what are you ladies drawing more? To evil or to good?
Good.
Good. Well, then you're angels. So you're drawn more, one is drawn more to evil than to good. So that is the position in which man is today. But man, as before he sinned was placed equally between good and evil. Now, I've got to ask you the question, and didn't we discuss it last week? If you're placed equally between good and evil, and the draw to good is the same as the draw to evil, now, and why is he placed in that position? In order that he should be the master of his own destiny, in order that he should be the one that forges his own perfection, he's got to do it himself. Now, if that, and how does he do it? By fighting evil, conquering it, and going towards good, and perfecting himself in the realm of good. But if he's placed equally between the two, how is he able to make up his mind? And I gave you the example of the poor donkey that was placed between the two poles of the carriage, and he couldn't make up his mind. Which bunch of characters they were equally succulent until he died of hunger. So I want to know from you, how could man decide that he wanted to do good? Where was the battle? He couldn't do good, he couldn't do bad. How could he make the choice? What is the answer to that? Didn't I put that to you as a task for you to give me the answer today? I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I just let you go without doing it.
Correct. Excitement.
You had a little bit of excitement. Well, I'm glad that the cause of the excitement is present to see. Right. That is, really, I want you to be able to give me that answer. Yes, sir.
I have a question. Adam was essentially where logically, if he just wanted to determine it on logic, there were equal number of reasons to choose good as to choose evil, and that there were equal numbers for if he just wanted to choose emotionally, just as many good reasons as bad reasons. Is that what you're saying? That's what I'm having a little trouble.
Well, I don't
know. Exactly. If he just says, okay, logically, if I do good, it'll be. You know, I'll have it. Whatever, this and that, and that. I'll feel good, and this and that.
To your credit, I must say that you are putting the question exceptionally well. To your discredit, I must say that you are putting me in the position of letting the cat out of the bag. If I give you the answer to that question, then I've given you the answer to my question. So I don't want to do that. I want you to tell me, get the problem in its direct perspective. Man before he sinned, I promise you I would do this, man before he sinned was placed equally between good and evil. The shikul, there was an absolute balance. You know these beautiful balances that they have. And you see the balance is, it's just one side doesn't weigh down the other side. So the question is, how is it that he could choose good? Yes.
Perhaps it's often mentioned that we need to take the consequences of our actions. And my question is, did Adam Arishan know the consequence of his actions? Did he know that if he would take one or the other, what would happen? I mean, because he hasn't really had the experience. This is the first day, at least this is his first day.
Yes, you see.
And so how would he know which he should be choosing?
You know, there are so many degrees in knowing, which we have often discussed.
Yes.
Everybody knows that smoking is not only injurious, but it is fatal.
Right.
Everybody knows it. And yet sometimes when I travel in the car, I look at women sitting in the driver's seat and driving, and the number of women smoking cigarettes whilst they are driving. The person is smoking cigarettes whilst they are driving. Don't they know? Don't they say why? The degrees in knowing. If you know properly.
Well, that's the decision, knowing what is bad, that's what you can tell to do anyway.
I don't know. It was something very serious.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed again, if he knew it was something very serious, why did he do it?
Mm-hmm.
Was it just that he goes into, why did he do wrong? Or was it something else? But still, don't force me into a position where I'm going to give you the answer to my question. I want you to exercise your mind. Yes, Elizabeth.
All right. I hope the Lord will think of this as just as an exercise of my mind. Because it may not be an answer. Then the last book of the donkey.
Yes.
The donkey is equally glad that she says that the donkey was not the son of a king.
Yes.
So he couldn't, I mean, he didn't make it, he died.
Yes.
There's certainly a difference between admiration and donkey.
What is the difference? Very good. The intellect is the difference. Now you see, you've got to explain it, that's quite right. You've got to explain it a little bit further than that. Now, in the next paragraph, that is paragraph Zion on page 48 and 7 on 49, the Derech HaShem says, what is the soul? What is the soul? And he gives there two functions of the soul. One is Chiyus and the other is Haskolah. So what are these two functions, Chiyus and Haskolah? Chiyus is life. What is the difference between a corpse and a live person? The soul is the difference. The live person has got life. So the soul gives life. That is one thing. A second thing that the soul gives is intellect. Now, he doesn't mention a third function of the soul. And I think that he takes that in Chiyus. He takes that in life. And the third function of the soul, I like to look at it as upon the second function of the soul. The first one is life. The second one is the emotions. That is all the emotions. That is a whole part of the soul. And the third part of the soul is the intellect. So we've got life, which is really biological life. And then we've got the emotions. And then we've got intellect. Now, if man is placed in the garden and he is told he may eat from the fruit of any of the trees of the garden, excepting from the fruit of the tree of knowledge, the only fruit from which he can't eat, from that tree he can't eat. So he knows. And now he is placed equally between good and between evil. Equally. So he is drawn equally to good and to evil. That being drawn, is that emotional or intellectual?
Emotional.
That's emotional. That being drawn is emotional. Now here comes the crux of the whole matter. He is given haskolah, he is given his sechel, he is given his intellect. His intellect must decide where he is going to be drawn to good and to evil. The emotions are good and evil, but the intellect is what has to decide. And there, of course, we depart from what is happening in our world today. Where the people say, no, if you feel like anything, then you do it. Just do it. If you feel like it, do it. If you want anything, then get it. There isn't the idea that the emotions are to be controlled. And after they are controlled, the emotions are to be channeled. And that is to be done by the intellect. This is something which the present-day world just doesn't know. That is so wonderful about studying Torah. So we see how to live. We see how to understand the world. We see how to react. We are able to learn. We are able to see. We are able to notice. We are able to observe. We are able to draw our conclusions. We react and we develop an attitude to the world. We develop an approach to the world. And what is most important of all, we train ourselves. Part of the part of the process of perfection about which we are speaking. That is the purpose of man. He has been created to achieve his own perfection, to acquire his own perfection, that he is the owner of it. He is the self-possessed, he is the owner of it, he is the creator of it. How does he do this? He's got his emotions and he uses his intellect to decide. Yes, I've got the equal proof. What is right? And he decides this is the right thing to do. We're going to ask the question. Will you be able to take the answer?
This thing came back quite a long time ago when I first started.
When
you referred to Adam as making the choice between physical and him, but making it because the intellect was separating him from an animal and making him a man, gave him the pride to want to make, be the master of his own fate and make his own decisions and perhaps fall because of it, but have the pride in knowing that he did it himself and that he created his own situation and that perhaps then he could fight to overcome anything that he created in a wrong way, and that actually had he known how far he would fall, he might not have chosen that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But that was why he chose to do the evil over the good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so what is the conclusion that you're saying?
The definite conclusion is what it makes you think of it, that that is part of the answer. Yes,
that's absolutely correct. Right. Now, so it is the intellect that is the deciding factor. Got that clear? Now, if you want to, I can enlarge on that a little bit more. So, we're speaking about man today now. Not man before he sinned. We are speaking about man today. But today, man has gone so far that something happens. One can have a very good mind. It's important to have what we call Yashrus Adalah, and that is straight thinking. Person can think straight. That is very important. Afterwards we shall see that there's such a thing as feeling straight also, but we are speaking about thinking straight. Now, what has happened in this world is that the mind has become distorted to such an extent that a person cannot think straight anymore. Cannot think straight anymore. If you speak to criminals today, they can't see what they have done that is wrong. Why did you steal? Because I needed it. But it belongs to somebody else. But I needed it. Can't argue with it. Why did you kill that person? I had the need to kill. I had the need. If I've got the need, I've got to satisfy that need. My psychiatrist told me something very similar. He said, if I'm angry and I want to break the crockery, then that's a need you've got in the spirit. Get it out of you. If you're annoyed with the person, shout at the person. Get it out of your system. It's a need you've got. He says, I have this need. So what do you want of me? That the mind can be distorted to that extent. Now, this is part of that vast subject with which psychologists are dealing now and dealing extremely well with it in psychiatrists, and that is cognitive dissonance. When one wants something very badly, one reasons and one has an approach, a rational approach to it. This is the reason for it. And of course, the way the intellect must work is thinking through and then come to your conclusion. The way they have been taught to do is come to your conclusion and then justify it and then think it through. This is a terrible thing that is taking place in the world today. And so you've got all this happening to young people. That is the way they think, and that is the way they are still being taught to think. So what does a person like that do? Now, Hashem, there came a time in the history of mankind, where Hashem saw this happening, it is already happening. So what he did, he revealed to us what is straight thinking. He revealed to us what is truth. And that we've got in the Torah. Moshe Emes, the Torah Suri Emes. We've got this in the Torah. The Torah is absolute truth. So we've got the absolute. So what do people with crooked minds do? They say, no, there is no such thing as absolute truth. Everything is relative. Have you got it, what I'm saying?
Yes.
Everything is relative. Justice is relative. There is no such thing as wrongdoing. Any person would do exactly the same thing if he had the same chemistry, if he had the same background, if he had the same parents, if he was placed into the same position, would do exactly the same thing. You can't blame a person for doing anything wrong. You would also have done it if you were in his position. And all this has been done, so even that has been taken away. They say there is no absolute. There's nothing that is absolute. There is no such thing as absolute truth. It's all relative. And it's in Paul Johnson, in his History of Modern Times, makes a very shrewd remark. And he says that, and he gives the exact date, it's was something, I think it was 1919, when Einstein made known to the world his theory of relativity. The theory of relativity belongs entirely to the world of physics. So Paul Johnson said that started a very bad period, because you've got the people saying everything is now relative. That there is no truth, there is nothing that is absolute, it is all relative. He said, and that is when it all started. And that has led up to the position that we have at the present moment. Everything is relative. So there we've got the Torah in order to give us that choice to know what is true. Because otherwise we just can't know it. And one deals today with confused people. And but so confused. So no idea of anything but way to go. Nothing at all. And unfortunately, even in the Torah world, we've got this type of person. So confused. So that is, we've got the Torah for. But man, before he sinned, was placed equally between the two, between good and evil. They were emotional, and he was emotionally charged. He was equally drawn to each one of them. And it was his intellect that was the deciding factor. Now, after the sin, where a man is drawn to evil, so he's in a much worse position. Mm-hmm. He's got something to say to him. That is the terror. Mm-hmm. And that is what the Gemara says, where Hashem says, Borosi Yetzer Hora, Borosi Torah Tavilo. Hashem said, I have created the Yetzer Hora, but I have created the Torah as its tablet. The best word I can think of as its antidote. I've created the Torah as its antidote. You've more chosen more to good, drawn more to evil. But you've got an intellect, you want to know the truth. You want to know the truth, there it is in the Torah. There you've got the truth. And it's absolute truth. Nothing relative about it. You want to know what justice is in the Torah, but it's absolute justice. There's nothing relative about it. That is the difference between man before and man after the sin. Yes, sir, Jenna.
Yes, sir. It's true that the Torah saves man from evil, but yet if man learns Torah without death, but is it really the truth? Is it really absolute truth?
Yeah, because Torah includes death, yet it is Torah.
But we learn that.
If Yaakov says to his father, Father, will you please partake of that I brought you? Derech Eretz. Esav says, Father, sit down and eat. Then you learn Derech Eretz, but Derech Eretz is in the Torah. All along there is Derech Eretz in the Torah. When Avram pictured his tent, he pictured his wife's tent first and then his own. It's Torah. Derech Eretz is Torah. In fact, we shall hear of everything before Tyler, but I don't want to go into that subject
okay,
now.
Okay, that's
right. I don't want to go into that subject now. But Derech Eretz can't be Tyler without Derech Eretz. That is it. Yes, Elizabeth.
Excuse me, Rob. I'm troubled that when I envisioned, before I envisioned
sin,
he knew. He was created, and he knew everything he needed to know. And yet after he sinned, he showed shame. It was almost, it seemed to me that he had strayed his thinking after, when it was no longer equal and he was going to evil.
Well, I deal with that. I deal with that. That is more or less a question that the Rambam asked, but I will deal with that. Now, so, before the he sinned, he was placed equally between the two, and he had such a wonderful chance of going right. He went up, and we explained what is the reason he went wrong, and he knew that he was here to get his own perfection. And he said, yes, to get my own perfection. But I am what I am because I was created this way. In other words, it's the story, the example that I always give you of the man who's created an empire for himself. He's got 100 floors in his building, all floors occupied with his offices, the various things he does. And he's got his son, he's now ready to come into the business. And he puts him onto the 13th floor. He's still got a long way to go. But on the 13th floor, and start from the bottom, 13th floor, beautiful office, aligned with mahogany, a beautiful gift, real leather chair, Persian carpet, very beautiful secretary. Got everything. He's got everything. And you get one boy comes into his bar. And he says, no, Dad, I want to start from the basement. And he goes right down to the basement. That's from where I want to start. And he says, but why? Look what I'm giving you. He says, that's exactly what I don't want. You are giving it to me. I want to earn it. I want it to be my own. I want to start from the bottom. And that is what Adam of Rishon says. I want to start from the bottom. Now, you might say, so, it's a very good argument. If you don't affect him, that he should start from the bottom. Very good argument. But when did he decide to do that? He decided to do that when he saw the food, the fruit, and his wife had already eaten from it, and he saw that it was a delight to the eye and it was good for food. So there was a big change that took place. That which was meant to be a means to an end, the food, he saw in it an end in itself. That was an end in itself. So he wants to eat the food in order to have the hedonistic pleasure of it. That wasn't the idea of the food. The idea of the food was that it filled his body, which has to sell it. Now, I've got to tell you something else at this stage. I'm going to tell you something else at this stage, which I hope you will be able to take. And that is that in the fruit there is that which is also that which is visible, but there is that which is invisible. But before we come to that, there is that which is tangible and that which is intangible. For example, the fruit itself is tangible. What is intangible about it? Its color. Its shape. It's intangible. There's something that is invisible about it. Its taste. There's something which is still more invisible about it. And that is what it does for the body. It supplies it with its minerals, with its vitamins. Whatever the body needs, it supplies all that. Now, there is the tangible and the visible in the food that we call the Gashmias Ha'Ochel. That is the material of the food. But there is also the Ruchmias Ha'Ochel. It's the invisible, the joy that it gives one.
Yes, sir.
I've got pleasure when I opened this box this morning. I've got pleasure from it. Just look how it looks. There isn't a blemish on the skin. And this is long after the sin already, when things are no longer so good to me. But look at the pleasure that one gets out of it. Now, there is ruchnias for ochel. The ruchnias for ochel is food for the soul. That feeds the soul. We can't see it. But that feeds the soul also. So, what is the fruit? That man should know. You know, when you take something and you give it to a child, only a piece of chocolate, a piece of candy, but really good chocolate, really good candy, it's the very best you can get. It's the real stuff, and you give the child a little bit, and he takes it and he just puts it into his mouth and he gobbles it up and he's out. That's not why you gave it to him. You gave it to him that he should enjoy it. Not that he should just gobble it up. So the purpose of it all is that man should enjoy it. He should come to a recognition of his Creator when he's enjoying it. This is what Hashem has given to him. When a mother gives a child a beautiful piece of chocolate, just a little piece, she wants the child to recognize it comes from his mother. It's because of the love of his mother. If he just gobbles it up, it's nothing. Next time she doesn't give him this chocolate. Next time she'll give her Hershey's chocolate, give him Hershey's chocolate, good enough Hershey's chocolate. What do you want to give him this circle chocolate for? He can't hear the difference in it all. That is what it was. It was a means to an end. Man sees it as an end in itself. You know, you take the gourmet. Look what he eats. Look at his body. Look how huge it is. And this is his whole mind is. Where, what restaurant can get the best food? What restaurant is this? And he asks his friends, what is that restaurant like? That is the restaurant he's going to. Is it because he wants to keep his body healthy? He wants the enjoyment. The food is an end in itself. That's changed everything. Where the end be. Where the means becomes an end. Now, they were ashamed of themselves. Before they had no reason to be ashamed of themselves. If there was sexual love, there was nothing to be ashamed of. First of all, it was in order to have children. But it had another reason too. And this was the expression of the deepest love. But it was a means to an end. To create a deep love between man and woman, between husband and wife. That was the end of it. That was the purpose of it. It was a means to it. What did they see? It became hedonistic. An end in itself. Now, I want you to understand, that in life, everything that we do, this is the purpose outlook. This is as we understand reality, as we understand the truth. Everything that we do is only a means to an end. Once it becomes an end in itself, that means that it hasn't got its end. So the means become the end, and it hasn't got its end. Then anything could happen to it. And that is what we've seen happening in California, and I tell you, outside the state of California too, that has happened to sex. Stick with that. It becomes a means to an end. And the end is taken away. Anything can happen. then anything can happen. If food becomes, it's no longer means to an end, but it's end in itself, anything can happen to the person. That you've got in there. That when you've got the means and the end, then the end always controls the end. It can't go wrong. But once you take away the end, and you make the means the end in itself, and you haven't got that end, got nothing to control it, anything can happen. There's no stopping it at all. And that is the world in which we find ourselves today. Now, some people don't want to listen to this because they cannot take it. So that is what has happened here. That is what happened to other Mauritian after the sin. Of course they were ashamed of themselves. Before the sin they would have been ashamed of something quite different. But now they were ashamed of their own nakedness. Of course. It had quite a different meaning. So Ordinarician did that. He misjudged, but that was cognitive dissonance. And it's a trap into which we all fall. We want to be like this, we want to do this, and we will find reasons for it. Right? You got it? So that is how we answer the question. Now comes the question of Zikr Chagus, yes?
Okay, I don't understand.
No, what you do is, you take that as a means to an end, and you make it an end in itself. Okay. You make it an end in itself. Now, if that became divine, the only thing you can do, you couldn't cusher it by burning it out. The only thing you could give is taking the whole piece into pieces and then building it up again. Now, what is the human being to compare to? Is he compared to a glass vessel? Is he to be compared to a metal vessel? Is he to be compared to an earthenware vessel? He's earthenware. The only thing, the only way to get complete disintegration, decomposition. And then when it's put together again, now it's clean. That's the fear for that. That's how it is. Good night, lady. That means all my people shall be dependent on you. That is why Father uses those words. This body that didn't touch anything in transgression, referring of course to Potiphar's wife, and he clothed him in clothes of fine linen. The neck that did not bend towards sin, and he put around his neck a chain of gold. The hand which did not take part in the transgression, Pharaoh removed his signet ring from off his hand and gave it onto the hand of Yosef. The feet that did not step over in order to commit the transgression, those feet let him come and ride in a chariot. And Pharaoh made him ride in the chariot. There's one other point that I'll try and view with a little bit later. Now, what is it that this Midrash is telling us? Everything that Pharaoh did for Yosef, hands, body, mouth, neck, everything was because he didn't think. Pharaoh doesn't know about all this. We want to understand, so what, so where does the Midrash get it to say? And the Midrash says that, what it says is that Moshe, that Yosef had complete control over himself. Because he had all this control over himself, that is why he became peace. That is why he became a Buddha. That is the greatness of Yosef. And now he says, Yosef Mishalonos Fela. They gave Yosef that which was his own. He wasn't elected a king. He wasn't voted in as king. He wasn't made king because it was thought that he was a good man. He was made king, he was made, given this position of Mishneh Levelah, as second to Pharaoh, because it was through pure merit. He earned everything of it. From where did Pharaoh get? And that is the insight that a person has. He just felt that here is a person who is in complete control of himself. Now, I've seen this many times in my life. I think the best example of it was Rebbe Cholem Wasserman. He was in complete control over himself, everything. He didn't raise his hand before he had thought about it beforehand. And where it became evident was, he had what became a very pleasing habit to me. When he gave a shear, he gave the shear, and he couldn't interrupt him, and when he finished the shear, he said, and now I will repeat it. Not only did he repeat the shear exactly as it was, but his movements were exactly the same. And he knew already, now he's going to raise his hand, now he's going to put his hands out, now he's going to use both his hands. He knew exactly what he was going to do. And when he finished giving the shear the second time, then he said, now you can ask. Now you can ask. At first, I used to think he needed to give it twice because he wanted us to understand it well. Afterwards, I realized that he gave it twice because he wanted to be absolutely sure of it himself. Complete control over himself. Never laughed. Occasionally, just a smile. Never laughed. His brother-in-law lived in Belgium, and his brother-in-law, he had visited his brother-in-law, and his brother-in-law saw him off at the station. His brother-in-law went back to his home and died suddenly. They managed to phone through to a station, tell the government, and came back immediately. Attended the funeral. One tear flowed down from his eyes onto his cheek. That was all the emotion he felt. Complete control of himself. That is kingship, and that only is so there can only be kingship after the person is completely in control of himself. Now, if you take into consideration what there is in the human being, take all the urges that there are in the human being, all the desires that there are in the human being, all the motivating factors that there are in the human being, there are at least tens of thousands of things. And the human being to be in control of all this, can you imagine what a vast world it is? To be in control of all that. Complete master of it all. That is kitchen. Now when you've got a person like David HaMelech, and we say this goes on, the dynasty of David HaMelech goes on, and the Melech HaMashiach will be a descendant of David HaMelech, that is the kingship about which we are speaking. When it says here, at this stage, Vayehi HaMelech Shlomo Melech HaChol, is the date today. You don't think of a palm tree and date. Never enters your mind. It's just a question, that is the word that is used. That is the same word as the date that comes from the tree. It's got nothing to do with that. Because this is a language question. And you say that there must be some link between the two. There is no link between the two. It's purely a language question. So, even Ezra says, this is a language question when you speak about Yad Hashem. So, we mustn't think of it in terms of Elohim. But this principle I can reveal to you. The Torah will never use an expression unless it is reality. So the reality of it is that there is such a thing as Yad Hashem. There is such a thing as Pi Hashem. That is the reality of it. We don't know what it is. But there is such a thing. With us, it is the hand and it's the mouth. That is what it is with us. So when we speak about Yad Hashem, it's not our hand, but we're speaking about Yad Hashem, the only thing that we can't possibly understand it, what it is. David HaMelech, the sweet singer of Israel, what does he use? The harp and the lyre, the strings. And what are the strings made out of? And he uses that to put, when after he's put his thoughts into words, he uses these instruments to express those words. And in those instruments,